Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is episode 317 of Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers Podcast, part of the MKE Tailgate Network. I'm James, joined by Ryan and Paul. There's no more Packers to talk about at the top of this, but you guys got plenty to talk about on reporting as eligible, Paul.
Yeah, I should probably post that call for questions sometime soon now that you mention it, because I'm sure that there'll be a couple. But
just
yeah,
a couple.
Yeah, it's over. It went down. It's unfortunate. But
are you guys in the 30s now for weekly questions?
Yes, oh, yeah. We are.
Yeah, that is hitting 30 damn impressive.
Consistently. We have to figure out a way to deal with that.
Well, we already had our first drop. Somebody left after the season ended, and I was like, wow, that was quick. It was like damn. Like 5 minutes after the game ended.
That's
it was
harsh.
Like, that's how they are taking out their anger is by dropping.
I mean, I get it. Like,
are you saying Anders Carlson cost us $5?
Probably yes. Although not a banner week for kickers across the board in the NFL.
No, Tyler Bass, woof. Yeah, that was
lots of badness.
Yeah, but you know, we got the final four in the NFL set. The Packers gave us hope, and that's the most dangerous thing of all.
Oh, and I'm not going to talk about it here, but like, if I could just pick a way that they may have lost that game, this is like we would have been my least favorite way of possibly losing the game. So I'd rather have gotten blown out. I would have rather have gotten blown out in a shootout, or I would rather have been close in a shootout. A zillion other things would have been better than this. It's okay. We made it far. It's a good season. Not a lot of young people, but man, wish it would have ended slightly better in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys will have plenty to talk about on reporting as eligible, so I'll leave it to that. We got a decent amount of questions this week, too, especially considering the Brewers still haven't done anything this offseason, or at least this year. But we do have a ton of prospect stuff to talk about and some questions about that, so we'll get to that in a minute. But first, a reminder, you can become a patron. Throw us a few bucks at patreon.com/mketailgate. $2 a month guarantees your questions answered on this podcast, and at least for now, reporting as eligible, apparently. We'll see. $5 gets
there'll be some more shows before we end. We have to do stuff still.
Yeah. $5 extra stuff. Packers mini pods when the Packers, you know, are still playing, as well as the minor league extra with Ryan and James Anderson from RotoWire. Even if you're not a patron, as always, support us another way if you can. Go to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening to this right now. Hit that subscribe or follow button. Tell your friends about us as well as we get closer to, I guess, pitchers and catchers, the next milestone for Wisconsin sports fans on the calendar. So, you know, about a month away from that, actually. But I guess as we look ahead to that, it's prospects week here on the pod. You know, we mentioned the minor league extra. Normally we save that a lot of that stuff for that Patreon podcast. But this time of year, a lot of the big prospect lists are coming out. Not much is happening at the big league level. So let's just talk about it here for a little bit. Let's start with prospectus. Why not? They're 101 and then they're plus 10. So, you know, that 111, I guess, prospects ranked by Baseball Prospectus. You know, in the last year, we obviously saw Sal Frelick, Joey Weimer, Garrett Mitchell graduate off of the list. You know, Jackson Churio returns. He's now in the number 6 slot for Baseball Prospectus. New to the list this year, though, we've got Jefferson Carroll at 38, Tyler Black at 58, and Jacob Mizorowski at 63. They also do list Brock Wilkin in their honorable mention next 10 piece. So, you know, let's just start with there. Ryan, I know when we were talking about that, we were like, whoa, Jackson Churio 6, that seems low. And we almost got mad, but then you were kind of saying it kind of makes sense given who's ranked ahead of him, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good prospects up at the top, as they're going to be in any given year. It's really not that big an insult to have a guy down that far. It's fine. But, yeah, I mean, it is a little bit annoying to see it. You would just like to feel 100% confident about things, and it's hard to feel 100% confident about anything at the moment with any of these guys right now. So, yeah, it adds to that a little bit, but no, honestly, it was interesting to see that, you know, they had Wilkin ahead of Gosser. They don't list Gosser anywhere. And I mean, if you had looked back earlier in the season, they actually had Gosser 7th in the system behind Carlos F. Rodriguez and Brock Wilkin. So, and then the top 4 that they ranked. So I guess he shouldn't have been surprised that they were going to go that direction. They're a little bit lower on Gosser, and that probably is the thing that stands out the most here. They're maybe comparatively a little bit higher on Black than some people are, but they really, those rankings are all kind of within just sort of the norm. I bet you when we see Keith Law's list, which I think comes out like the week in between the Super Bowl and the championship games, when his list comes out, it's probably going to be fairly similar to all this too. There was nothing really earth-shattering here with this list. Just, you know, noteworthy that they're high enough on Wilkin to have him, you know, just missing their top 100. And that's a positive thing to see, you know, just in general.
Yeah, I think the only two big takeaways for me are we, again, and now are pretty consistent at putting a lot of people in top 100s, whereas, you know, 5 years ago-ish, less than that, we didn't. We had a couple, if even one. And, I think what bothers me most about Churio, and this is stupid because it's, like, top 10 or top 5 or whatever, it's 6, close enough. That's just noise, the difference between them. But it's different because we gave him a bunch of money, and then he sort of fell 4 spots or 5 spots, which just hurts a little bit, just a little bit. Like, oh, okay. So, you know, it's different. Giving like the number one guy like an unprecedented contract is different than giving the number 6 guy an unprecedented contract in the minds of many. That's all. But it doesn't matter. It's fine.
Yeah, and this is pretty heavy. Looking at the BP list generally, like there's more new guys in this year's 101 than you're generally going to see.
Yeah.
In that, like at the very top of the list, you have both. Well, I guess they had, that's interesting. I thought I had it backwards. Both, they had two guys who were just drafted in Wyatt Langford and Dylan Cruz ahead of Churio. And that's pretty justifiable. I mean, those guys were considered really, really stud prospects. It's sort of amazing. The fact that Wyatt Langford fell to 4 with the Rangers and is either at the very top of every prospect list right now, or in this case at number 2, like he's in the very top few spots of basically every prospect list at this point. The fact that he fell all the way to 4, I mean, I get it. I understand why that happened. But in retrospect, you know, when you're the World Series champion and the year you won the World Series, you grabbed a guy who is one of the top couple prospects in the game, in the draft that year, you're doing pretty damn well for yourself. Like that's a very successful season for Texas on a lot of levels. And they also have, besides him, Evan Carter in the top 5 as well.
Yeah.
So
they
have two guys ahead of Jackson Churio. And I mean, frankly, I can't really blame them, but it's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, I think the caveat for me with these two is always kind of as you guys were saying, don't pay attention to the number specifically, but kind of pay more attention to the grouping. And for me, you know, having what, 4 guys in the top 60, 65 or so, it, to Paul's point, is pretty impressive given where we were just a few years ago. And then even if you look at the Baseball America list, they have, you know, their top 4 in 70-ish or so, which is a little bit worse, but then they also have a 5th guy in Robert Gosser sneaking into that back end of the top 100 at number 98. So I guess, Ryan, just initial thoughts on the BA list. They have Churio at number 2 in his rightful spot, I suppose. Mizorowski at number 32, Caro at 33, and Black at 70. So, you know, some minor differences there. What stands out to you?
Yeah, I think they're just a more aggressive on most of the Brewers guys in general, especially, you know, I guess it really does matter. At the very top of these lists, more time is spent, you know, trying to parse out the top 10 than is spent, you know, trying to parse out like 15 from 25,
right,
for sure. Like they spend more time on that. So I guess that really does sort of matter, even though they're all in that elite tier. And I think you probably can draw a line. I think Churio is kind of the end of the elite tier, with then the guys below James Wood is number 7 on that list. But for this one, Churio at number 2, which I think is going to be pretty commonplace. I have a very strong feeling that he's going to be number 2 on Pipeline and for Keith Law. I think Jackson Holliday is pretty much the consensus top prospect in the game. But the next group, everybody starts with, you know, Churio, Caminero, Wyatt Langford. That's the group of guys that gets talked about next. Evan Carter, I guess, also. But Mizorowski being up at 32 is nice because that, to me, I feel like if they didn't think he had an excellent chance to start, you're not putting a guy who you think is likely to end up in relief at 32, whereas, you know, 63 for BP, that feels more like they're sort of hedging their bets on that and saying, well, he has, you know, elite stuff, but there's real reliever risk here. And I know Keith Law thinks he's a reliever. We haven't heard from him yet in terms of a list, but I know he has real reliever concerns. Well, I mean, he thinks he is a reliever as far as Mizorowski goes. So those are kind of noteworthy there. Black being down at 70, I mean, that doesn't really, 58 versus say that doesn't mean anything. And Gosser sneaking on at the back of this list. We knew because of the mid-year list, this was pointed out to me in our group chat by someone, that Gosser was on their mid-year, so it makes perfect sense that he would, you know, end up here. But it's also very good to see that he's, you know, those end of lists, everybody, like when you're making these lists, because I've made some top 30s in my time, and when you're doing those, like the end of longer lists like that, it often isn't necessarily about who you think is best, but who you think might like have like flash upside and like a person you want to kind of stick a flag in. Now, that's going to be a little bit different process-wise at a place like BA, where they have 6, 7, 8 people working on the listing collaboration, and it comes down to they're just voting and putting their like top 150 in there, and then they, you know, pull out, you know, who gets the most points, and that's the top 100. But it still is kind of noteworthy that he was able to sneak onto the back of a list like that. I think that is interesting.
For sure. We do have a couple of Patreon questions regarding prospects, so let's just jump into those right now. Dave Pensorn asking, what's a realistic comparison for Churio? Are we talking Trout Acuna-type potential or more of a McCutcheon-type career? There's definitely a difference between those two, but Paul, I would hesitate to put Trout or Acuna on anybody.
Yeah, that bum McCutcheon total. So Mike Trout is like an upper 0.0001% upside. Churio has that upside, but the odds he hits it are pretty low just because, you know, we get a Mike Trout once every 25 years or so. So it's just unlikely statistically for that to happen. And, you know, he's got, he's shown up on his comps list. It's not impossible. So yeah, but like McCutcheon's probably like, if Jackson Churio turns out to be like Andrew McCutcheon's exact career, that's great. That's fantastic. Andrew McCutcheon was awesome for a long time.
What an MVP. Yeah.
Yes. He was an MVP and a great player, et cetera, et cetera. So like, it's hard to say a realistic comparison. It's a hard concept because Churio's range of outcomes are still pretty broad. They could absolutely be like Trout or one of the best players in the history of baseball and a Hall of Famer. They could be McCutcheon, a super great player. And is he actually a Hall of Famer? I've never looked at McCutcheon's.
I don't think so.
No.
He's Hall of Very Good. He's in that for WAR.
All right. Hall of Very Good indeed. Like, totally possible. But, like, he could still bust, too. Like, contact problems could still show up, and he could still not end up being particularly good or a fourth outfielder. So I don't think that'll happen. I think that he will probably be very good. But, like, a realistic comparison is hard at this stage because when you're still as young as he is, the range of outcomes are still really wide. So I think if I were putting some money down, McCutcheon's actually not a bad place to put that money. I think he will be... I think he's really good. I think he'll be an all-star more than once. And, you know, in that vein, I think his floor is really high because of athleticism and speed. And as long as he can hit, he'll be good. But, like, there's not a realistic comparison for him now because it could be anything.
Well, I think Jonathan Judge is going to be very upset with you for saying that because, you know, Pakoda did have his top two comparables as Ronald Acuna Jr. and Mike Trout.
Yeah, I know. So, I know. Yeah. Yep.
But, I mean, like, look, the third comparable there is kind of an interesting one because I think...
Tell that to Yelich, a.k.a. Carly Yastrzemski. Carly Yastrzemski, Tim Raines. Also Jesse Winker, a.k.a. Carly Yastrzemski, also.
Yes. But yes, the comparables are always hard. It's a very difficult thing to do, and it's probably not the wisest thing to do because... And honestly, it's a weird thing. So if I told you right now that Jackson Churio was going to have the career of... the third comparable here on Pakoda, which is Jason Heyward, your first reaction to that, I think, for most people would be, oh, like, just that.
But even though he was amazing his first few years, yeah.
Well, but then go and actually look at the career that he had over, the first, 8 to 10 years of his career, which is what we have him signed up for, and you're getting 30-some WAR. Like, you're getting a huge, huge chunk of wins above replacement. Yes, a lot of it is coming defensively, and there's some offensive seasons in there where you're like, it's a frustrating thing because you did see flashes of the superstar that Jason Hayward kind of looked like he could be when he was coming up as a prospect and early on in his big league career. It looked like he was on that trajectory, but in reality, it was, it was a fine outcome for him. Like, he will not go down as some major bust for top prospects. It's not that, that's not what's going to happen there at all. So, I'm looking at the Jackson Chourio comps that they have over at Zips are much, much worse. Rick Bassetti, Rocco Baldelli, Paul Blair, two guys I'm really not familiar with, and one guy who had a lot of potential but was always hurt.
Yeah. Didn't he win a Rookie of the Year before, he broke? I don't know. I guess my question then, we talk about Chourio being the highest rated prospect the Brewers have had since Ricky Weeks. If he has a Ricky Weeks career, Paul, is that disappointing?
I think it is, actually. And I love Ricky, but it's not like Ricky was super great and not for a very long time. Like, he had one really good season, mostly because he got hit 25 times and led the league in plate appearances and accumulated a lot of WAR. But I also think that's pretty unlikely because, well, while Weeks was fun, he was limited defensively. He did not give you a lot of value. Like, he did not have the floor baked in of just a premium position with a good athletic profile. It was all about the bat with Ricky. And his bat was good, but I actually think a lot of people, myself included, actually expected a little more from the bat than we got. So I think that would be disappointing if he just turned into Weeks. He should be better than that.
Yeah, I mean, it would be disappointing. He ended up with 18 career WAR. And that's not a terrible outcome for the number two pick in the draft. Like, that's fine, especially that draft. That 2003 draft, woof, not good stuff.
Not good at all.
No, but it's not what you want, especially when that guy goes from being the number two pick in the draft to being, the number five-ish overall prospect. Like, he wasn't quite as high as Chourio. Chourio is going to end up being really the best prospect of the prospect grading era graduating from the Brewers. He's going to end up sort of graduating with more esteem than anybody else in this prospect rating era, which, really goes back to like 1990. So like Gary Sheffield is kind of just on the other cutoff side of that. But we've talked about that a lot on the minor league pod, so I'm not going to belabor that. But yeah, I think Weeks would be it would be what? Like a 35 percentile for 35th percentile outcome. Like, it would be fine, but it would be pretty disappointing. Like, it'd be below what you were hoping for.
Right. And I think, to Paul's point, Chourio is very good defensively and plays center field. That floor alone is probably around that 18 WAR just on defense, which means if he's Ricky Weeks level on WAR, that bat really didn't come around. So I don't know. Just a random thought I had. We do have another Patreon question from PJ Wessels asking, as Kurt Hoag noted, lots of prospects invited to big league camp this year. Besides Black and Gosser, which of the invited prospects do you want to see get run in the majors this year? So the Brewers have invited, as noted, Tyler Black, Robert Gosser, but also through various minor league contracts and such, we've got Wes Clark with an invite to spring, Evan McKendry, Jacob Mizorowski is going to be a spring invite, so that should be pretty fun. Tobias Myers, Carlos Rodriguez, the pitcher, and Brock Wilkin also will start as non-roster invitees. So, I think Ryan, you look at this list and it's kind of the short list of, you know, the top prospects we could expect to see at some point this year. And they want to get some early looks. I think for me, you know, seeing Miz in like those middle innings where like there's still some big leaguers in the lineup, but just to test the waters there, that seems kind of fun and interesting to me to see him step up in like, you know, fourth or fifth inning or so.
Yeah. Anybody who hasn't had the pleasure of watching Jacob Mizorowski clown hitters, you're going to have fun with that in spring training if you're able to, you know, tune in and see some of that, because he absolutely clowns hitters. I mean, what I saw from him last year when I would tune in to MILB TV or the Futures game, I mean, he was the guy at the Futures game. Jim Callis was just talking this last week on his podcast about how he's still upset that they didn't give him the Futures game MVP. He's still annoyed about it. So that is definitely must-see watching. It's hard to do something like watch defense and evaluate like defense of a third baseman on sure. TV, especially like during spring training. But I do want to see Tyler Black, how he looks over there, how he kind yep. of how he functions, how he moves, and what the arm looks like, because that's really going to be the deciding factor, I think, for him. Is does he have the arm strength? Can they improve it? He needs to like go to Driveline or something and notch up a few yeah, miles an hour or something.
Go pull a Brock Purdy at Driveline.
Yeah. And then excited to see Carlos Rodriguez, obviously, because you know, that'll be fun. And I think we're gonna see him in the majors this year. And then Brock Wilkin, because he's the new kid, and I think we could possibly see him this year. If he continues to hit, there's probably not a lot standing between him and, you know, a shot in the big leagues by, say, August, September. So, yeah, all of those guys are really high on the interesting list. I think we're going to get to see Gosser relatively early, though probably not breaking camp. So I think that can wait a bit, but we're going to see him sooner rather than later unless there's a spate of injuries.
Yeah. I want to see Wilkin just to see what we got there. And Miz for sure, because I feel like Miz is very much along the lines of the there ain't no such thing as a pitching prospect kind of guy. He, I think, can just get anybody out right now. And so let's accelerate that as much as possible.
Yeah, it really does come down to him developmental path-wise. It's like, if you want to make him a starter, you're going to have to keep working him and stretching him out and, you know, making sure that he can hold velocity into, you know, his 60th, 70th, 80th pitch.
Yeah.
You're going to have to do that stuff. You can't get around that if you're going to have him start. And I think the project at this point, you got to try for him to be a starter, right? Like you have to shoot for that and not just settle for the reliever, even if,
You probably do. You owe it to him and to your franchise to try and capture that. Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, so it's tricky, but yeah, it's a tough one, because you would really, really, really like to just say, you know, you only have so many bullets, so let's fire them at big league hitters.
I also feel like when I see the ball move that much, my brain instantly goes, not a starter. Whatever is making that happen is also going to make that arm not work for that long. So.
Yeah, I mean, in his case, he's got some pretty big levers he's working with. So, like, that's a big part of it there. But that also can be problematic when you're trying to start, because, okay, so how good is the command actually? I mean, it was pretty good in that inning in the Futures game last year. Like, that's really kind of what stood out, because he wasn't, like, filling up the zone all over the place. He was just working around the very edge of it, and hitters couldn't not swing. Like they were, and I guess part of it too is it's the Futures game thing where guys are up there to swing and do something that nobody wants to take, you know, a six pitch walk in the Futures game. That's not what you're there for. Like nobody wants to do that.
Right.
But, you know, it's also, he also looked quite good in non-Futures game appearances. That 12 strikeout game was right before he got hurt and was shut down. That was really something. So,
all right, moving on. We did have some piece of news this week that was minor league related. Lucroy Suitcase asking about the new complex the Brewers have in the Dominican Republic. So, question on Patreon this week is, what implications does the new Dominican complex have for the competitiveness of the Brewers? Are there other infrastructure improvements the team needs to make to keep up with the rest of the league? So, Ryan, what do you know about the Dominican complex and, you know, how it'll kind of help the Brewers when it comes to developing that talent from Latin America.
Well, it looks really nice, and I think the important distinction here is they've had a complex for a while, but it was in conjunction with former Brewer reliever Torres. Why am I blanking?
Who
it
was? Solomon Torres.
Solomon Torres. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sol Torres. Thank you. So this is their own. Like, they have this, and this is their place, and it is important to do this because you want to have, you know, that footprint and have an identifiable place where guys who see it, who see pictures of it, who get to go there for one reason or another, to know, hey, this is a pretty cool place. This organization is like spending money to make the lives of guys who sign with people on this team. Like, it's impressive. It's impressive. If you've seen pictures, you know, like, it looks pretty cool. It's nice looking. So that's important. But the other thing really I want to talk about here is the fact that keep up with the rest of the league. Like, they are, it was really, really funny to hear the conversation on the podcast between Ben Badler and Carlos Collazo, their future projection podcast that they do. They had a really interesting conversation, and I'd like to continue the conversation more if we can get a chance here. But the thing they were talking about was, like, Collazo was talking about the fact that, like, the Brewers, to him, having come in a little bit later, Carlos is younger, and his primary area of coverage is the draft, not the international market. But he was like, yeah, the Brewers to me are like this, one of the standards of international prospect development. I heard him say that, and I went, you know, I get it, but I'm so stuck in my mindset of, you know, the Brewers being perpetually behind in the international market that we as fans were always living with in the aughts and the first half of the last decade. And so my perception of it is still, yeah, that the Brewers aren't one of the elites. But then I saw the poll that was on MLB Pipeline, where they asked, they talked to like almost 100 front office personnel, and they asked which organizations are best at working the international market. The Yankees were number one at 21% of the vote. The Brewers and the Padres tied at 16% for the number two spot. And it was like, whoa, people are mentioning us with the Padres in terms of international development. And I'm like, you know what? I see it. It's justified based on what they've done over the past like 5 years in terms of bringing guys in. But it's still hard for me to wrap my mind around it at this point. It's, you know what I mean? It's I'm not quite caught up there yet. I'm still to me, you know, Gilbert Lara is still a big deal and hangs out there in my brain, occupies way too much brain space for me in terms of how I think about them and the Latin American market. But it's true. They have pulled so much out of there in the last 5+ years at this point that it's kind of undeniable that they're one of the best.
Yeah, I think it's cool, too, that, you know, you look at this new facility. One of the things that they really hyped up, too, is not just, you know, growing the baseball talent and you know, the fancy weight room there to help, you know, these teenagers really kind of turn into professional athletes, but also, you know, like the further education that they have on that campus too, you know, with like, how, here's how to handle all that money you just got and you're 16, you know, that kind of thing, and really setting them up for success, even if, you know, they flame out in single A or whatever, right? Like, that's kind of a really big selling point, I think, too, when it comes to the Latin American market.
Yep. I don't have too much to add other than it's good to have these more. So the Brewers, I think, are, I didn't actually know they were that much on the forefront after what Ryan just said, but that's good to hear. I like the move towards more professional establishments in Latin America, generally speaking. More so than anything, there has been, I'm sure there still is quite a lot, but a lot of exploitation. And the more on the up and up these places become, the more professional they are, the better people will get in terms of advising. And the more that everybody's invested in mutual success, the less that happens. The better that is for everybody involved, including the countries that have all of these academies in them. So, you know, it's hard to deal in international transactions. Generally, it's very, very difficult. The more that these become sort of mutually beneficial establishments with a lot of transparency, the better it is for everybody, including baseball.
Absolutely. All right. Let's move on to big league questions. So we've got Logan Inderdahl asking about that vacuum at first base. we did have some reports this week. I think it was Robert Murray saying that the Brewers are kind of poking around. Former farmhand Garrett Cooper could be in line for a reunion with the Brewers. So, but also still strongly linked to Carlos Santana. So Logan's question here is Cooper or Santana? At first, I was in Santana's camp, but this year seems like an anomaly, and he might just be catching a case of the olds, as our friend Matt would say. Cooper doesn't solve the power outage, but he seems more likely to repeat his 2023 season. What are your thoughts? So, Paul, you know, we talked about kind of liking Carlos Santana, but he could catch a severe case of the olds real quick.
He is old.
Yeah.
So I do think when you're picking at this level of first baseman, you are kind of splitting hairs. I think if you go with Santana, I think you at least have a decent chance of catching one final good-ish Carlos Santana season. I think he's a better overall player than, that's not controversial, than Cooper. You know, like, given all things considered, same age, whatnot, that's what you go with. But there's probably a good case for Cooper as well. He has had a few good seasons in the last, we'll go 5 years. One was the stupid COVID season that doesn't count. But and I have not watched Garrett Cooper play in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I do not know what he looks like. I cannot remember the last time I saw him having at bat, and he was quite possibly in the organization the last time it happened. But his numbers don't appear to be terrible. I'll give him that. There's maybe some small amount of upside still. He's 32, so you're not getting like some kid who's going to bust out. But it's like, it might work out, it might not. You're in the spaghetti throwing part of the prospect here. So they're both probably fine spaghetti pieces to throw at the wall.
Yeah, if I'm throwing spaghetti at the wall, I'd rather do the Carlos Santana spaghetti.
I would too. Yeah.
I mean, it would be fine. It's better. Anything is better than Logan Powers. I mean, honestly. Though that may not even end up being actually true, right? Like that, it might end up being that Bowers is better than one of these guys. It just, I would like to see something on paper better, and I'm still going to just stupidly get my hopes up for Rhys Hoskins, which I think is my answer to the next question. If I'm remembering.
Also,
right here.
We will not be getting Garrett Cooper back. He does not have reverse platoon splits, so you can cancel it right away.
Okay. Oh, man. A righty who actually crushes lefties? We can't be having
crushes that. Is a little bit overstating things, but he does have an over 800 OPS against lefties, so
that's good something. Enough for a guy who's like barely above quad A. So yeah. That's fine. He does have a 900 or 953 OPS at AmFam in all of 9 career games, but there's that. So maybe he plays well in Milwaukee. I don't know. All right. Mentioned the next question. Tim Brown asking, at this point in the offseason, what's the biggest free agent move you could realistically see the team doing? So Ryan says Rhys Hoskins. What do you say, Paul?
It kind of probably is Rhys Hoskins. I actually saw Ryan mention it first, and then I actually saw it get some traction. I don't have a bigger one than that. Like, I never expect them to make any big signings at all. They always surprise me. And even when I have guessed big ones in the past, it's never that. It's never correct. Like, Grandel was a big surprise. Moose was a big surprise for me anyway. Unless somebody tells me in advance, like Brewer World, I just don't know. So.
I will say, I was not the originator. There have been many other people. Jack Stern is the one I initially...
Oh, Jack was on that? Okay.
The Rhys Hoskins idea from months ago now. But, like, that was kind of his priority at a point when I was off thinking about different things and different priorities. And then it kind of crystallized, no, we got to get this first base situation solved. And yeah, that would.
It's really one where they should do it. They need to add power. That's the most obvious solution that exists there. It's hard to get an impact bat anywhere else, especially for an amount of money that we might plausibly pay somebody. That's the thing.
One, especially like this time of year, the fact now that there are still guys out there. Santana is out there and Cooper is out there, but the Brewers haven't jumped on either one of them yet. You know what I mean? They haven't they haven't said, okay, fine, we'll settle for you. They seem to be looking maybe to shoot and aim a little bit higher on this. And we're not there yet. We're not into the time period where, you know, the Brewers got, well, we're getting very close to when Yelich and Kane were signed or traded for and signed. But we're still quite a far ways away from when Grandal and Moustakas signed the next winter. So it's getting late, but this is, you know, once again, we're still looking at almost half of the top 50 free agents. I think it's still over 20 have not signed anywhere yet. And some of this is because Scott Boras is holding out the top of the market because he has the top two guys in, well, what do they call him on Effectively Wild? Snellinger?
Yeah.
Snellinger. Yeah.
Snellinger. Yeah. I feel boring because, like, Matt Chapman's the other one that you could add theoretically. I just don't think they will. So,
well, I mean, last I heard he was shooting for 6 years, $150 million.
Yes. Too much.
Yeah.
Right?
So, like, I mean, that's just more than, like, anybody should pay Matt Chapman, like, it let is. Alone the Brewers. So, yeah. But he's probably not going to get that. But where he stops or, yeah, where he ends up when the music stops is going to be interesting to see. So,
I think Hoskins does make a lot of sense too, because right, he's coming off the knee injury, basically missed all of last year. It's a perfect, you know, pillow contract, Brewersy 1 year, $15 million situation. They could easily get him for
it.
Right?
Fits, like, really, really well.
Well, I wonder though, he's what if he does go that direction, what he's probably going to want is one of these deals. This is becoming really common where you get 1 year plus a player option. And so it literally is, it's, if it works, he's gone after a year. If he really struggles and sucks, then you get him for a second year. It's like they bake in like extra downside for the team. And I just don't know if Arnold and Attanasio are going to go for that. Even though you could argue it would be in their best interest to do it. I just don't know if they're going to like say, yeah, we'll sign up for having you around for a second year, but only if you suck. Like that's basically what that contract guarantees. So, we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Steve S. Our next question, more free agent talk, saying major free agents always get plenty of talk. I'm curious about a couple former Brewer free agents who perhaps had down years or are in the twilight of their careers for fun, AKA predict, don't expect, for each of the following Brewers, do you think they will A, get a major league offer, B, a minor league offer, C, be out of Major League Baseball at the start of 2024? I guess those are the three options. So the players in question here are Colton Wong, Manny
Pena. Well, let's
Pena,
just go one by one, right?
One by one? Yeah. So Colton Wong, man, last year was rough. I don't know if he'd be in the majors, Paul.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with... I think he'll get a minor league offer. I think he's enough of a pros pro that somebody will have him stick around. But Colton Wong is just the type of guy that once it goes south, it's probably not coming back. Great defensive second baseman. That's not a thing that tends to exist for a very long time. And he was for a while, but that's fallen off a cliff. We saw that happen with the Brewers while he was still hitting a little bit. Now the bat's gone too. There's not a role for him. He's probably done. I think he'll probably get a look, but I think he's done.
Yeah, I'm going to say minor league offer too, just on the principle of there's no such thing as a backup second baseman.
There's not. There just isn't.
Yeah, that's an old baseballism. There's no such thing as a backup second baseman. You're either a, you know, you're a utility infielder who can play shortstop, third base, second base, or, you know, you're the starter at second. There's really not, you know, a guy who can just play second who backs up. Ask Ricky Weeks.
All right.
Amen to that.
Second, Manny Pena. Major league offer, minor league offer, out of baseball. He's getting up there in age.
I was just going to say, how old is Manny Pena? let's look that up because that's important.
While you do that, I'll jump out here and say I think he is going to get a major league offer just because... catchers. Catchers.
I agree with just because catchers. And Manny Pena is prototypical backup catcher in terms of he can catch even if he can't hit. But that does run out of steam at some point. I think he might be there. I'm going to go with minor league offer on him too. This will be his age 37 season. Ooh. And over the past two seasons, he has a combined 29 plate appearances. So the writing is on the wall for Manny Pena already. And I think that that writing may just be washed off the wall and down the drain at this point. So,
yeah, I should probably change my answer on that. I think you're right. I didn't know about the 29 plate appearances. I should have looked that up.
Oh.
I guess I'll go with my same answer, different guy, Grandal.
Yeah.
You know, major league offer because catcher.
Yeah.
Is Grandal next?
Yes. Grandal is third on the list.
Okay. He's coming. Was last season the weird season where he hit a zillion home runs but never any singles? Or is that two seasons ago now?
That might be a while ago now.
Oh, yeah. That was a while. It's 2021. Oofta. Oh, yeah. That's not good. I think minor league invite for I think major league invite for Grandal. He's been good recently enough that somebody will say, "Hey, you go catch and maybe you can hit a few more dingers out for us," and that's fine. So, I think he's not that old. I think he gets a major league.
He's still got some cachet, I think. Yeah, I'd be with you on that one.
Yeah, you look at his run with the White Sox, because we were, you know, I think everybody was sort of on the "we'll bring him back." After his 2019 5.3 win season with the Brewers.
Yeah.
And yeah. I guess 2020, it's hard to count. He had 1.6, but that's over only the 60 game season. So he was still up there. He was a really good starter at that point. 3.6 Fangraphs WAR in 2021. So still pretty reasonable. But Paul said, that was that weird season where it was like,
he hit 240, 420, 520. Like,
yes. Amazing line. That's amazing.
That's an
amazing
line. And then for the last 2 years of that 4-year contract, he was below replacement level. 0.4, negative 0.4 WAR, negative 1.1 WAR. Yeah, so he completely fell off a cliff there while the Brewers were, you know, busy. First with Omar Narvaez, turning him into a good catcher for a while,
right.
And then, you know, getting William Contreras and doing that. So it is just one of those things where guys do tend to get older quicker than you think, especially at the catcher position. Like, they tend to age really fast.
Yeah, I was definitely one that was on, you know, team very upset that the Brewers didn't, you know, match or at least make a more, you know, like a competitive offer for Yaz after that year, and seeing what he got with the White Sox. I was of the mind that, hey, Brewers easily could have paid that. Yeah, you're paying for the first 2 or 3 years of that contract, knowing the end of it kind of stinks. Turns out, obviously, the first year of that contract got burned by COVID anyway, which is kind of a bummer for Chicago. And then, yeah, as you guys mentioned, the last couple, barely playable, if at all. All right, next on the list, Paul, your favorite, G-Man.
Love G-Man, but he is, I think, toast at this point. He has never offered anything defensively at all. I have had the luxury of, in spring training, seeing G-Man personally play left field for a couple innings, and it did not go well. He can't really hit anymore. He's not that old, but he's old enough. I suspect he is done in the majors. He is Korean. He was born in South Korea. He was raised in Korea. I bet he ends up back in Korea. That would be my guess. I have no idea if he's interested in it, but I don't think he's hitting in the majors anymore.
Yeah, I can't really find anything here about this. Interesting. I was trying to see, because I, for some reason in my brain, I thought he had agreed to go to Korea or to NPB, and I can't find anything about it. So I think he's pretty well done here.
He looks washed. Those numbers look bad.
Yep.
Yeah. Korea wouldn't be out of the question. You know, guys like Shin-Soo Choo have gone back to kind of, you know, finish up back home kind of thing, return a valiant hero kind of deal. So that may be on the horizon as well. All right. Last one on the list here from Steve, old friend Jonathan Scope. So, you know, obviously had the, you know, almost historically bad half year for the Brewers after the trade deadline in 2018. Kind of had a bounce back year for the Twins right after that in 2019, and he's been in Detroit on a free agent deal ever since then. Had a decent couple of years there in 2020, obviously the shortened year, and then 2021, he hit 22 home runs. But again, last 2 years, 2022, 2023, pretty bad, and basically looking like second half 2018 Jonathan Scope.
Yeah, I don't. Is he hurt or something?
He's not that old. He's only 31.
Sight unseen, I'll bet he gets a major league offer. And I wonder, like, his line last year just looks injured to me. Like, he didn't play that many games, maybe because he sucked, but he didn't play that many games. And he had no home runs in the 55 games he did play, which strikes me, like, I feel like you should at least luck into one or two. Like, he still had decent-ish power in 2022, and maybe that's just the end of a downward trajectory. But I kind of feel like at 32, you might still be able to coax a decent season out of Scope, who has fallen off a cliff before over the course of his career on more than one occasion. So I also wonder if there's just a weird hitch that he hits once in a while, or slump that you can actually break him out of with some work. I think he'll probably be back in the majors.
It looks like Scope was DFA'd in July.
Yeah, I was just looking
maybe
at
he's
that.
Toast then. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. This one, he feels like a candidate to go over and play overseas, yeah. But I can't find anything about him going to play overseas either. So
DFA'd and didn't catch on anywhere is not a good sign, though. Like, that sounds sounds like all of Major League Baseball thinks something is very, very wrong with him then.
Sure.
Yep.
All right, Jay Google, our next question asking, since it's the offseason, who has the craziest, best one season for the Brewers that you can remember? Is it Chris Carter, who, speaking of catching on overseas, led the National League in home runs, right, 1 year, and then was in Japan the next? That's a pretty good one, Paul. I don't know
it
if
is.
Any others come to your mind.
It wasn't really a good season, though, right? That's the thing about
that was
Carter
that
season.
Was why they let him go. Yes.
Right. It was a very hollow 41 home run season where he couldn't play defense at all or get on base or it's a weird one. So I don't. They've had so many guys have like just a cup of coffee coming through. Like, I was just trying to look up Jim Edmonds really quick, and my computer's freezing.
Ooh, that was.
We had Dante Bichette for a couple of years, and I feel like he had one pretty good season for them. Before he went to the Rockies and had a bunch of his good fake seasons. So I might go with that. Plus, my dad always thought he was Euchre was swearing when he said his name, which may be half true.
So. I'm going to go with a category here, and I think I'm going to name one of the players, and you'll name the other one as soon as I say it. But okay. Scott Podsednik stands out.
Oh, yeah. All right.
And then who's the other one then?
Pat Listash.
Yeah, Pat Listash. Yeah. Those two, especially, you know, honestly, Listash should be the one that we talk about there first, because as you know, Podsednik, that first year was, with the eyes that we have now to look at these things, it was a 3.2 WAR season. It was solid. It was a fine season, but a 117 WRC plus, and really just, you know, stealing 43 bases that year. That was the rookie year in 2003. Yeah, like that was fine. But the 2004, where he stole 70, he actually took a big step back that year in terms of he was a well below average. He was 76 WRC plus. So yep. About 25% worse than the league average in terms of hitting. But still had a 1.9 WAR, Fangraphs WAR, because apparently his defense was better. I don't know. Did they move him to left? Is that what they did? They moved him from center over to left, and he was. I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure that did happen. Didn't they have like an uber good defensive center fielder at the time who couldn't hit a lick?
Oh, yes, they did. Oh, what was his name? Yeah. No, you're 100% right. They did. Okay. Now I need to look at the 2003 Brewers. Let's see. See if I can find it. You are 100%.
Nobody needs to look at the 2003 Brewers.
Well, no, the 2002.
While Brewers Ryan is looking that up, I'm also going to offer up Dave Parker. Who played one season with the Brewers in 1990, hit 21 home runs and 30 doubles, made the All-Star team as one of their representatives, got some down-ballot MVP votes, and, of course, famously would do his batting practice with an actual goddamn sledgehammer.
Yes.
Which was also super fun. On that team, Mike Felder would also use the sledgehammer for his warm-ups, which was funny because he was a tiny person. But he was a fun one season guy to have and was legitimately good that season. He's also in a bunch of the Brewers Nintendo games for that reason, because all baseball Nintendo games were made around 1989 to 1992. And so Dave Parker is almost always like the best or second best player on the Brewers for those.
Awesome.
So those of you screaming at your radios right now, I found it. Alex Sanchez.
Alex Sanchez. Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
Alex Sanchez.
So that's probably, my description is probably not quite right for Alex Sanchez. He could not hit a lick. That is true. And he was super fast, but I actually don't know if he was that good a defensive player. If memory serves, he was kind of a dummy.
So dummy that he sticks in my mind as the first official baseball PED suspension. He was one of the first guys.
Oh, yeah. Which is pretty special his game.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Because it was always just funny that, of course, the first guy busted has no power whatsoever. Anyway.
Yeah. No, this is really remembering some guys. Enrique Cruz, who is their Rule 5 pick, they had him as a Rule 5 guy. So they were just carrying him for the year in 2003 because they wanted to see if they could, you know, get him to stick. Dave Burba. What's on that
Dave
team?
I remember Burba. Dave Burba. I got a bunch of his rookie cards.
Yeah, Dave Burba. There's a good story about
how him. Long did we have Ben McDonald for? It couldn't have been that long.
He was kind of a big free agent after he busted out with the Orioles. He was the number one overall pick with the Orioles, and signed him.
That's what made me think of it, is I have a zillion Ben McDonald rookie cards.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because that's the that's that era. I think he was a rookie in like 88 or 89. So yeah, you would have absolute piles of those things.
Wow. Yeah, so he was very, very good for us in 96. That he was 2 years though, just not as good in 97, unfortunately.
Ruben Quevedo. the man, the myth, the legend. Q.
Yes.
RIP.
All right. Let's move on. Adam Post, with a question about some other potentially really good news. I guess maybe not if you're not a fan of, you know, Amazon owning everything, but, you know, Prime buying into, or Amazon, I should say, buying into Bally Sports as a minority owner, or Diamond Sports as a minority owner, basically taking over the Bally Sports streaming aspect via Prime. So Adam's question is, how are you ushering in the era of Amazon Brewers broadcasts? When will you be ceremoniously deleting your Bally Sports app? I deleted mine a long time ago because I just sucked it up and paid for Spectrum because it was the only thing that actually offered Bally Sports. But I'm kind of intrigued by the Amazon aspect of this.
So I'm not the best person to opine on this personally, not actually living in the Brewers market. I just pay for the MLB ticket package and I get to watch every game on that, unlike all of you poor suckers who are blacked out. I think given the way that baseball was trending and the RSN economics were trending, this is probably a godsend for baseball generally. Like having a big backer like Amazon pick you up, which is flush with cash and invested in A, having live programming. They're all into football now as well. And B, having live programming that they take away from traditional broadcasters so that they don't have them is a really good place to be. So if nothing else, this will keep baseball well-funded for a little while. I will put a word of caution in there. Amazon didn't get rich by handing out a bunch of checks to people. And at some point, if they're your only viable distributor, you will run into Amazon negotiating, which is not fun. So there is that down the road. But for now, I mean, Bally Sports was terrible. That deal was terrible. And if nothing else, it'll work. So Amazon.
Oh, so I foolishly, when I cord cut last August, I don't know if I mentioned that on the pod, I finally got around to cord cutting. I, like an idiot, I was signing up for Bally Sports, instead of doing the month to month, they had the, oh, you can save 10% or whatever if you just sign up for a year. I clicked it and then like a week later went, oh, that was really stupid. Why did you commit to them when they might not exist? Why did you just hand them this money and now they have it? Like, you shouldn't have done that, you idiot. Steve was just yelling at me about that this last week when this came up because I mentioned it to him and he's like, you are a moron. So, so I felt like a total idiot for that. But a couple of points of clarification here, because I think the app is still going to be around for a little while. At least it better be. If I get cut off here, I'm going to be not pleased unless they give me some like way to like redeem it over. If I just get cut off here, that's going to be really bad. But they're also, I think, People don't have to worry about this going away from cable, because so far all these deals have just been like the deal has been negotiated with cable to just continue. So they'll continue showing it on cable just as they were before. It's just that Bally is buying a part of, or sorry, Amazon is buying a part of Diamond Sports. That's right. What this is they bought a big chunk of it. So it's not exactly good. Like this was another attempt by them to stave off bankruptcy and, mm-hmm. or at least to delay it or, you know, whatever. So there's more to be written about what actually is going to happen here, but I don't think we're going to be deleting the Bally Sports app anytime soon, unfortunately. But oh God, can you imagine if it was minimally supported before, what level of support it's going to get now? God, probably going to be even more useless, which is hard to imagine, but yeah, so that'll be interesting. But I think they're still going to be on cable for people that get cable. I don't think that's going to go away, because it definitely didn't go away last summer when Padres got taken over. But yeah. there was a note of caution here. They talked about this on Effectively Wild, that like the lawyers for MLB were basically broadsided by this, or blindsided, I guess would be a better way to say it. They did not see this coming. And their comment was basically, well, we have to go look at the language in the deal, which sounds kind of ominous. Like,
no, that's never good, as Paul probably knows. Yeah. Oh, man. Ryan, I hope you just don't end up as a creditor in Bally's bankruptcy case.
Well,
And it sounds like, yeah, I'll have to delay on just canceling the TV streaming aspect of my charter until they figure that out. But until then, at least hopefully we don't have to wrestle with the Bally Sports app for long. All right, Price Trozen asking, would you have guessed that with Tyrone Taylor being gone, it looks like the longest tenured brewer is now Devin Williams? So that's fun. Anyway, here's a very cold stove question. What promotional items are piquing your interest this season? Would love to get back for the puffy vest. So we're pulling this list up now. It does not look like there's any ex-golf bobbleheads, Paul. So what are you looking most forward to?
Well, there is a Brewers bobblehead TBA, so let's not count
Ooh,
that
that's true.
Right out yet, because it's still possible. I'm interested in the image viewer, which...
yeah, it's old school. Yeah, it looks a little kaleidoscope.
Hitting the nostalgia button for people who are even older than me.
Right.
I mean,
I had one of those with like Disney movie scenes.
So I did too. I had one. Yeah. I don't have a lot of fond memories of it or anything. So that's fine. I like all the City Connect stuff. I think it looks great and the kids love it. So the Hawaiian shirt seems to be kind of straddling two generations in its messaging as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe that one.
It's not the first Hawaiian shirt that they've had, though. I think the one that they had before was one of those more limited giveaways where you had to be in a certain section. You had to buy the special tickets for it. Right. The way that they do, like, you know, May the 4th be with you and all that stuff.
Yeah. I do like, they clearly have done a lot of like market research on things like TikTok for a lot of what's going on here. Cause like the fanny pack, I'm told, is in right now, which
the Brewers belt bag. Apparently, yes, fanny that, pack
it's,
is.
It's unfortunate that that is the case, but I believe it's true. They have a fake. They have a fake Stanley. Good work there.
Yeah, nice fake Stanley. Done. Just a quote unquote tumbler.
And the puffy vest is, of course, all the rage at the moment as well. So they're doing a nice job there. I want to see the soccer jersey. I am a sucker for a good soccer jersey, and that is not pictured yet. So that's the one I'm most excited about personally. But I think they've done a nice job of targeted marketing this year.
Yeah, if we can get a hold of one for you and put Sterito on the back of it, that would be fantastic.
Oh God.
Yeah, we'll get Sterito put on the back of it.
If you can customize them, I do absolutely want that.
Yeah, so this one isn't as interesting. Yeah, the vest thing. Unfortunately, these are XL, and I'm not XL anymore. So
looks like a nice vest, though. Looks like
look
you
nice.
Know a vest you'd buy for $50 anyway. So
I have one. It looks just like that without a Brewer logo.
The tumbler is good. That one really does look pretty good. And
I did say fake Stanley. I didn't look. I assumed it was not a real. It can't be, right?
No, I don't think so.
One. Okay,
probably not. No, but Yeah, it does look, in the picture anyway, like pretty legitimate. But
it's a Costco Stanley. Yeah.
I'm much more interested in the next question. So this gets into stuff that I had a lot of fun with looking at.
All right. Nick Vollendorf asking, it's time for the Brewers season ticket holders to rank their preferences for the rewards program. Ryan's very excited about this. How would/did you rank your rewards? So here is the list. Ryan has it in a note here. So differentiating between, you know, the giveaways for us plebeians, the season ticket holders can ask for, I guess, a personalized Brewers City Connect jersey. All right. Brewers season seat holder pullover. 2 game tickets to Northwestern Mutual Legends Club. Is that what they just call the 300 Club now?
No. It's the thing next to the 300 Club.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So 2 club seats, basically. You get to, one of the things, throw out the first pitch prior to a home game in 2024. There's that sweet, sweet $50 X-Golf gift card.
Gotta have X-Golf in there.
That goes towards reserving a simulator. There's the American Family Field 2024 promotional giveaway 6-pack, size medium or XL. So I'm guessing Ryan's
it's
out
the
on
stuff.
That one.
Well, it's the stuff that we were just talking about. So it's those things. You get a pack of all of it.
Awesome. Okay. Sausage race participants. Restrictions apply.
What do you think the restrictions are?
I can't even begin to imagine.
I don't want to get sued by anybody.
No. Yeah. We were talking about this one. Watch batting practice from the outfield warning track. Ooh, almost got that one, Yelly.
Well, it's so weird. I want video of this one occurring, and I want to know, A, how many people are doing it? And is it like one at a time? Is it just you, or is it like 100 other people, like the home run derby with little kids, like shagging balls?
No, I guarantee you there's like a rope set up where you can't go like past the actual warning track.
Right.
So yeah. they like aren't even going to let you on the grass at that point.
Wait. So they put you on the warning track, but like in a pen?
Probably.
That would be my guess. I've never seen them do this. So I have no idea.
I need more information about this. I might actually email their PR for this one, because like shagging balls for batting practice is fun. Standing on the warning track in a roped off area is not fun. That's the opposite of fun. I'd rather be in the picnic area then, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. This has very, do not speak to Mr. Yelich unless Mr. Yelich speaks to you first vibes. So,
all right. Last couple then, a mascot or American Family Field VIP experience. Yes. Mascot or American
Again,
Family Field.
VIP. I need clarification on what the difference between the two
exactly,
choices are.
What's a mascot VIP experience? Like,
yeah.
Okay. That might go with the next one then too. The complimentary mascot appearance, pregame tour, or VIP visit. So,
which, like, does the mascot appear at your, like, can you have Bernie come over for your kid's birthday party? Because people would legit do that, but that seems unlikely.
Yeah, I would send Hank to Andy Schaaf's house.
Yes, you would.
Yes, that would be a good idea.
We would do that. Yeah, there's some. I can't imagine anybody doing the X-Golf thing. Like, who is signing up for this? So we don't actually get signed up for this. Yes. We don't actually get to do this because we are not in the inner circle of season seat holders. This is the gold package. We are silver.
You don't get access to the $50 gift card.
No, we are the silver and blue package. We have to choose from those. We don't get this this top tier. Which,
what does X-Golf cost? Because
I was wondering
that's like
too.
2 beers.
It just says towards reserving a simulator too. So like 50 bucks off what the 200 or whatever it costs to reserve that. I don't know.
Yeah, this one definitely. Yeah. I don't know. Wait. Yeah. I don't know which of these I would actually pick. Not watching batting practice from the outfield warning track. I feel like we had the opportunity in the past to actually watch batting practice from behind. Like, and I think it was in a pen. Like, they actually did, like, put everybody kind of behind in a pen. I wasn't the one who got to go for it, but I feel like that actually did happen at some point. So this is weird. I don't know.
Like, you're kind of hanging out in the area where, like, Yuke and the broadcasters are just shooting the shit with the guys, right?
Right. So, X-Golf's $40 an hour on Monday through Thursday and $60 an hour Friday through Sunday.
Okay.
So that doesn't even cover a weekend hour session at X-Golf.
Very accessible entertainment option. All right. My Only Lemonade asking or saying, RIP Sports Illustrated, equal parts sad and dumb. As a budding sports fan, I'll never forget receiving that subscription renewal from my dad each Christmas, or the joy of seeing a Brewer Packer Buck on the cover. Stealing a Twitter trend here, but in honor of SI, what is a cover that remains burned in your memory? For me, it's Rob Deere and Brewing Up a Storm from the Easter Sunday game. 10 years old and beginning to learn hometown pride. So I agree. The SI thing is equal parts sad and dumb. I grew up on SI. I was saying on Twitter, you know, I didn't have cable as a kid, didn't have high speed internet. So really, SI was like my look into sports that weren't like just in the local paper, which I also didn't really get. So, you know, I've got stacks and stacks of these things still sitting at my parents' house from like the mid to late 90s. I guess for me, some of the more iconic ones, you know, there's that really cool John Clay photo of the year one with like Camp Randall and his visor in the Michigan defense and his visor. That was a really cool one.
That's a good one.
I know we were talking before. So, Paul, I guess what comes to mind for you when it comes to iconic Sports Illustrated?
One of my good friends growing up was the son of the longtime Milwaukee Sentinel and later Journal Sentinel head chief sports editor Bill Windler, and he had Sports Illustrated covers plastered all over his room, so I saw him all the time. The one that always stuck in my head, though, was one when I think it was Mark Eaton entered the NBA, and it had a picture of him posting up Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with the headline, "Look who's looking up." Mark Eaton was 7'4", so he was 2 inches taller than Kareem was, and seemed incredible at the time, even though Mark Eaton kind of sucks. Played for the Jazz, but that one it was an incredible photo to watch because it did make Kareem look very, very small, and that one sticks in my head. More than anything, though, I want to mention other promotions. Like the football phone was a Sports Illustrated promotion.
Oh, nice.
That's why I got my first subscription, was because I wanted a football phone.
Football phone was huge, but aside from that, like if your team won any championships and you subscribed to Sports Illustrated, shortly thereafter you got the recap video for them, and it was the only way to get the best recap video for your team winning a title until the internet started. Like, right. And that was it. Like, if that happened, you had to do it.
I assume you have the 96-97 one, Paul?
I do, over there somewhere, yes.
Yeah, I got think a I bunch have the video Packer someplace, but yeah.
I got a bunch of Packer videos secondhand, and that was one of them. I did not get it by subscribing to Sports Illustrated. But yeah, I got it over there.
Yeah, I definitely subscribed to get that. Like, I wanted that highlight video from that and was annoyed that there wasn't one for the 93 Rose Bowl. There should have been.
Should have been.
Didn't that should have been. Yeah. But what sticks out to me, and I was actually looking because it doesn't look like it was a cover story, but the one that will really stick with me forever is now been immortalized in the late Craig Council's T-shirt that he would wear on road trips.
Craig Council. Yeah.
Said to me.
R.I.P.
Yeah. So he, the Bob Uecker in the Speedo as like a 75-year-old dude looking absolutely like the most in shape 75-year-old man could possibly look.
Bronze God. Yeah.
And exactly. Just like in a, not a Speedo, but it's damn close. Like it's definitely, it's Speedo ish. And he's playing, was he playing ping pong with JJ Hardy and Corey Hart? I think it is.
Or something like that.
Yeah. And it wasn't, but it wasn't the cover story. It doesn't look like, so it doesn't seem like it was on the cover that year, but it was a story that was in there. And that is just, will forever be my memory now of that team. Which is, you know, holds a special place in my heart, even though they didn't win a damn thing.
Yeah. It's sad. I hate media conglomerates who buy things just to shut them down.
Yes, so, it's dumb.
It's dumb and should be illegal. All right. Morgoth 10, our last question on Patreon this week. And this is a great one, asking, what question do you want to be asked this week? I'm reading that in like the Kramer as a movie phone voice. So what question do we want to be asked? And then feel free to answer that question or just leave it dangling. I guess I don't know, but Paul, you missed the sheep's head euchre conversation last week. Do you want to answer that one? I think it was who would fill out your sheep's head table, and I guess, do you have opinions on what game is better?
Sheep's head is better, and I will take actually any member of my immediate family on my sheep's head team in a second. They're all excellent. I will take my best friend from all of school and growing up, Jared, who now lives by me, which is nice. But the previously mentioned son of Bill Windler, Aaron Windler, wrote like an engineering thesis paper on optimal sheep's head strategy at MIT. I will take him on my team because no one is better at sheep's head than he is. So, well, other than maybe me. So that fills out that one. But yeah, sheep's head is better. Calling aces is better than Jack of Diamonds, and we'll leave it at that.
Okay. I love that there's like now some weird subculture at MIT where like they play this very Wisconsin Northwoods game, or at least did know, at the time. True. Maybe, yeah. I'm gonna go with. I would like to answer the question. I don't know if you were gonna ask it, James. The Twitter question that was coming up, Mattis Toboggan's question. I do want to answer this one.
Well, go for it then.
Okay.
It's our question. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to read it? Oh, man. Mattis Toboggan asking, with Contreras around, Jefferson Caro is a bit miscast, though still useful as a part-time catcher in DH. Might he be a good centerpiece for a Luis Arias trade? Maybe Caro and Garrett Mitchell for Arias, Josh Bell, and a few dollars and or a lottery ticket prospect. What do you think?
So a couple things. First off, Luis Arias is a free agent after this upcoming year. So you'd be getting 1 year and then he'd be a free agent. So you'd be trading 6+ years of Jefferson Caro for 1 year of Luis Arias. And I just like that's not something I'm really interested in for most reasons, but also specifically because you need two catchers at this point. Like your backup catcher is going to want to play a lot. You're going to need them to play a lot. And especially with the way that it's trending, like right now, William Contreras is one of the better hitters on the team, period. And so having him on his off days do some DHing so he could play, you know, maybe he starts 100 games behind the plate, DHs another 20 or 30 games and gets in, you know, like a total of, you know, like 130. That would be a pretty good thing, but it obviously then leaves quite a bit of room for somebody like Jefferson Caro to play. And I think that's fine, especially early on. Maybe there comes a point where you trade one of them, but I don't think you're in any rush to have to move on from Jefferson Caro. I think this is like, it's not really a problem. So And as far as the actual specific suggestion, again, Arias doesn't have that much trade value because you're only getting him for 1 year. So I definitely wouldn't give up even Caro alone, let alone Caro and Mitchell for him. So I would pass on that just because, yeah, you're not getting enough control of Arias to just make it worth it.
All right. Paul, I realize I didn't give you an opportunity to ask yourself your own question. Do you have anything you want to address? You wanted that one? Okay. I took a shot in the dark, but then realized that maybe you had something else you wanted to talk about. All right. Thanks for the questions this week, everybody. That'll do it. Of course, as always, we shout out new patrons here. So, Ryan, who do we have joining the ranks this week to shout out?
Yeah, we lost one, but we gained three, so we came out way ahead in the deal. So,
boom.
Welcome and thank you, Jason Telleronic. Keith Keskinen. And I think he's been in before. I think he's a returner.
He is.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was very familiar, even though apparently I can't pronounce his name. So, so that's the black IPA at work. And then Steve Schlachter. Welcome to all three of you. We very much appreciate it, even though the Packers season came to a premature end there, unfortunately. But we do appreciate it, and hopefully you guys are all on board and listening to us right now at the Tailgate Podcast.
Absolutely. You know, pitchers and catchers report in about a month, so good time to join up.
Yep.
Thanks for everyone. A reminder, go to patreon.com/MKETailgate. If you're not a patron yet, throw a few bucks our way. Show your support for us and allow us to keep doing this thing. That'll do it. Obviously, not a ton of news, but we still found some things to talk about. We always appreciate those Patreon questions. We'll wrap things up here. Be sure to tune in to the reporting as eligible 49ers postmortem with Paul. Plenty of plenty to talk about there as well later this week. So stay on the lookout for that. In the meantime,
Really quick before you sign off. At the beginning of recording this podcast, I posted the call for questions for RAE, and it is now the end of this podcast, and we have 11 of them already.
So. Oh, my God. In like an hour. That's great.
And yeah, wow. At 9 to 10 at night on a Sunday.
On a Sunday. Yep. Yeah. Oof. I hope, well, if JR's back, hopefully he rests up. I know he got to travel to San Francisco. That's great. He's going to need his reading voice for that. So, I'm definitely looking forward to that. In the meantime, everybody, stay well, stay healthy this upcoming week. We'll see you here next time on Milwaukee's Tailgate.